Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Priscilla Vang runs Payroll Vault. She's client-focused, she's technology-driven, and she's very interested in helping you succeed in your business and in your financial life. So give her a call. You can click on the information at the end of the podcast. And Ursula Menches, sign up for her sales camp. She's awesome.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, Mike Cabea's here.
Hi, Nancy.
And our third sponsor is the Great Metropolitan Back Rub. So Annette Rondano runs that. It's touted to be the best back rub in the metropolitan area.
Yeah, we had her on a podcast here a couple of times, I guess.
Yes.
She just sounded like she knew exactly what she meant. I mean, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she's been in the business for a long time, so she's pretty good at it.
Yeah, she knows a lot about naturopathic therapy. She's a gem of a person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So give her a call. Get into her. Get in for a back rub. Everyone should during this holiday season. We all need some relaxation.
Yeah.
Techniques. Some self-care. Our audience knows because a lot of people listen to Philip Madsen of Core Products International. They listen to our several conversations there where we traveled to Wisconsin.
Shittek,
Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And you recently tried out one of his therapeutic pillows.
It is working so good for me.
What?
I can't believe you're asking me this on the air.
I know. Well, I just think people need to know that if you're having some back issues, outside of checking out your mattress, check out your pillow.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, my God. That thing, you know, when you first handed me the box that came with it, I was just like, is this even
going to work?
Is this even going to work? What's the difference here? It doesn't even weigh a ton. It's not too big or whatever.
Yeah.
But the minute, the same first night I slept on it, I could tell a huge difference.
Oh.
A huge difference. Obviously, I still have little problems because you see, the one I have is the Tricor something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tricor therapeutic.
Yeah. It's supporting your neck in a certain way. And then your head kind of plunges in the middle, which is kind of a whole type of thing.
Yeah.
And so it supports your neck. What's doing to me is that it just helps open my throat so well. So I snore less.
Oh.
Yes.
I didn't know you were a snorer.
I do snore. I can tell you that right now. I do snore and very strong.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Okay. How does Sylvie manage?
Well, she's gotten used to it over the course of years. And talking about her, she's very happy about this pillow because it's changed things. I still have to learn to live with it. You know, I tend to go back to my bad habits. You know, I tend in my sleep to remove it or something.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But when I get on it and I sleep, I almost don't snore.
Oh.
And in the morning, and that's the most important thing, I have plenty of energy because I breathe properly because of the position of my neck.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
So I've never heard of that with pillows. That's why he's so fantastic with
it's incredible
this invention.
What these little things can do for you.
Yeah.
And you've spent years of your life maybe torturing yourself. And there's a simple, you know, cheap solution around that can completely change your life.
Yeah, exactly.
So the pillow's working so good for me.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Oh,
Phil is going to be so glad to hear that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, my God. That thing is helping me.
Oh, good. All right. Excellent. Well, you and I have been kind of on a journey. We forged into a really big topic this year, and sexual abuse has brought to light through the hashtag MeToo. Mm-hmm. It's opened up our eyes to what people experience being sexually abused. I know from my own experience that it takes a long time to heal from.
Oh, yeah.
And that it's even harder when you mix it, when you start to understand that it's about power, control, and entitlement. Mm-hmm. And John Choi last week talked about the entitlement issue. So he was on episode 5 and 6, and he's the Ramsey County attorney. Your son, Bob Cabea, mm-hmm. yeah, he stood in for you.
Yeah. He did a great job.
He's so impressive. So tell us what Bob's up to, because he's got his own little entrepreneurial venture going. Plus, he's also working with you and Cabea Media.
Well, he's a grown-up person now, I want to say. He just turned 18 earlier this month, and he's attending college already. He seems to love college, which makes me feel very good about it, and I see him working so hard. But Bob is also seriously involved in music, you know?
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yes.
I've seen him play the drums.
From the time he was a tiny little thing, like a baby, he wanted to do everything I did. I was a journalist at the time, working at the radio and television, and he wanted to go with me. As a result, I made some commercials that went viral when he was only 15 months because he spoke very early. And so did some of my kids and my other kids too, very early. And he could speak very fluently and clearly, very articulated. And he knows from that time that he wants to become a journalist. So, I don't know what I want to say about that, but, you know, he's into that. He wants to become a journalist.
Well, he said to me, as it turns out, I'm a lot like my dad.
Oh, is that what he said?
Yeah, it's the most beautiful things.
Wow.
He's so happy about it.
Yeah, but if you look at his picture, like when he was a kid, and my pictures, you'd think it's the same person.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
You know, sometimes it's difficult to tell if somebody from your family looks like you.
Yeah.
But I can tell my kids looks like me. Like, you know.
One out of the four.
Well, at least one out of the four. Yeah. And so he's into music. He's publishing his stuff. And guess what? On his birthday, one of the local radio played his song.
Wow. What's the name of the song?
Space Time. Yeah, that's the
Space Time.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the title of the song.
So people can look that up, can't they?
Oh, yeah.
On
absolutely.
YouTube? Yeah.
It's on YouTube. It's on all of these, platforms.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah. So I like that he's, proactive. He's an intelligent little boy.
Yeah.
And he's serious. Not involved in bad things whatsoever. Good friends and stuff, so.
Yeah.
Makes me proud.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've known him since he's been little.
A little, yeah.
Yeah. And so to see him, grow into a man.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a wonderful person. And we had a lot of fun together.
I know. Well, more and more he's going to be part of Cabea Media, you know.
Yeah. Well, he's ready.
He's ready to go. Yeah.
So this is our last conversation in a series of 7. Mm-hmm. And a comment that John Choi, that we talked about last week, was, when to make bold changes and when to make evolutionary changes. And the bold really is a revolutionary change.
Mm-hmm.
And John Choi was talking about, so he covered or had the case of Curtis Waymeyer, who was a priest in the Minneapolis-St. Paul Archdiocese. He followed how the Archdiocese of Minneapolis and St. Paul handled the Curtis Waymeyer case because he was accused of sexually abusing kids, and I think they found some... I'm not going to go into the details because we'll just get sidetracked. But anyways,
okay.
he's He was a priest that was passed around following the playbook for concealing the truth. And the institutional playbook that follows seven different strategies. And so the main overarching reason that the strategies are even in place are because the church was trying to avoid scandal. Mm-hmm. And so they moved him around. And John's experience with that helped him to realize that instead of going like Pennsylvania, where they involve the grand jury to investigate all the dioceses, mm-hmm. Within Pennsylvania, there's eight. They had already investigated two other archdioceses before the Pennsylvania grand jury focused on the other six mm-hmm. Archdioceses and came up with this playbook that they saw working throughout the system, and they believe it's worldwide. And I think so too. And John Choi believes that it's in play. He chose not to involve the grand jury because he wanted to make sure that justice was served. And so he did evolutionary steps mm-hmm. to put into place ways to hold the archdiocese accountable. And so they actually are accountable to Ramsey County and the judge who oversaw their case. That's how they're holding one of the steps of the ways that they're holding the church accountable. So I just think it's crazy.
Yes.
You know, that the church needs to be held accountable by the legal system because they can't police themselves. And maybe it's not about policing, but they're not operating according to, they're not practicing their faith.
Yeah. I mean,
bottom line.
And there are citizens at the end of the day, right?
Right.
Yeah. It doesn't matter if you believe or not, or don't believe in higher power. You're still a citizen of a country, of a given country, and you're a citizen of America for that matter. And so they have to comply to the regular law, I believe. Not that I believe. I think that's the right thing to do, you know, because they're part of this society. They're dealing with people who need to comply to the law, so they have to observe the same law themselves too.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it would be like they're standing above the law, which is unprecedented. So they have to be held accountable for any acts they have, you know, committed or orchestrated.
And talking with him, I just was thinking a lot about evolutionary innovation and revolutionary innovation. And when do you orchestrate which? And so John's approach to go and take an evolutionary step. So it's making change, but it's in incremental steps. It's not a whole transformation of the legal system. Mm-hmm. So I think in his situation, it made sense. And I thought it also made sense with Pennsylvania to do the investigation that they did involving the grand jury. And I feel like we are in a revolutionary process of change and transformation, and it takes longer than when you're making incremental changes. There's not a lot of risk. And so what people don't understand is when you're in a revolutionary change, well, anyone who's gone through a divorce knows that's a revolutionary change. Like your whole life is up for evaluation. Your perception of yourself and your relationships has changed. One of the focuses of John Choi's position as Ramsey County Attorney is to focus on eliminating, if you can't eliminate totally sex trafficking, what can you do to impinge or change the laws so that they can catch more sex traffickers? is his approach is evolutionary. He wants to do it in steps so that when he goes after the sex traffickers, he can also make sure that he wins cases so that people are being held accountable through the justice system in a way that impinges the trade,
yes,
so to speak. And another evolutionary step that he's taking is he's trying to he's changed who they're going after. So he feels that children, teenagers, should not be incarcerated. They are not juveniles and delinquents. They have run away from home because of legitimate reasons. They need to be helped, but they shouldn't be incarcerated. That he's better off taking the approach from the demand side. Like he used an example of if we put an ad in for sex with young girls, 13 to 16 years old, he said that the phone would be just ringing off the hook within like 4 minutes of when the ad would go live. That's how much demand there is for men wanting to have sex with young girls. And I was pretty shocked too.
Yeah.
So he feels like if he can approach it from the demand side and go after those who are soliciting sex, which has always made sense. You know, as he's talking about it, I'm like, well, duh.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not the way things were set up. And so people have found that his approach is very evolutionary.
Oh, yes.
It's shaking things up, but he's doing it incrementally.
Yeah, one step at a time.
Yeah, and he's involving the community, and he said that we need to have deeper conversations with boys. And every experience that they have, just like with girls, shapes their who they are as adults. And so he was saying that a hockey coach, and he maybe used a different sport, but I'm saying if a hockey coach is using language or the way he's talking about someone as examples, that he wouldn't say these things in front of his mother or sister or other women,
yes,
he shouldn't be saying them in front of boys while he's coaching.
Yes.
Is one example of how you need to set up the environment.
Yes.
And shift our culture, because he believes some of the predatory activities that are going on in the church are or just in the sex trade even, are embedded in our culture.
Yeah, that's what you hear, things like locker room talk.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Like it's acceptable.
Like it's acceptable. No.
Or when someone is sexually abused, the family not believing them.
Yes. Or putting the blame on them, on the victim.
Yeah, blaming the victim is an old strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah, they used to say, you know, why are you dressing the way you are?
Yes, yes.
You know, and John used an example of, no one says that if somebody, you know, gets hit by a bus and dies.
Yeah.
So it's a funny example, but I appreciated his insight. And so I was thinking a lot about evolutionary change and revolutionary steps. And
yes,
when are you in a revolutionary process? And when is it important to take as a leader? When are you invoking big change? Like when I started the podcast,
yeah,
it was a revolutionary innovation,
yes,
for me with Me Mentor. It's something, yes, I'd never done before.
Yes.
It changed my whole schedule. I had to get buy-in from my husband. You and I had to talk. We,
yes,
it changed your schedule.
Oh, totally. Totally.
Yeah. It launched us into a different direction.
Yes. And I'm with you on that. I like and I understand the approach adopted by John Choi. You know, things we've been assisting to, like child molestation and, you know, all of these things have started a long time ago, okay? It's become pretty much a system, and it's kind of difficult to dismantle it like all of a sudden, you know. You sometimes need to go a step at a time, move into the matter, and in order to disintegrate what has become kind of a systematic situation here. But the truth is that sometimes revolution is the key. You know, even in the story of the universe or the earth for that matter, big revolution steps have made it possible for us to even exist in the first place. You know, if big catastrophes didn't happen, like the dinosaurs being wiped away yeah. from the surface of the earth, we probably wouldn't have what we call today our race or civilization.
Yeah.
You know, major breakout of huge diseases like in Europe at a certain period of history made it possible for the advent of medical science.
Yeah.
You know, and so from time to time, when you look at the world or the history of all of the world and stuff, you'll see that major breakouts have come as a result of revolutionary steps.
Yeah.
But the same is also true, even spiritually, you know, in spiritually. Sometimes you need a break. And this is, there's no connection whatsoever with the future or the past, but it's just a brutal break for you to shift your understanding of what is going on and your becoming, you know. And some of the spiritualists refer to Kundalini, for example, which is a huge awakening. I mean, there are even some parts of the yoga who deal with the Kundalini thing. And this is another revolutionary step that happens in somebody's life with everything being completely shifted. You know, you may go through some dark time, pretty much looking at somebody suffering from schizophrenia or something like that. But it's just a total break in you that needs to happen for you to get awakened and acquire a new perception of the reality and move ahead as far as spirituality is concerned. So both aspects go hand in hand, you know. Which one is good, which one is not good, I can't really speak in those terms.
Yeah,
I'd say each of the method is good for a specific time.
Yeah.
Or occasion.
And I think within the church, as more and more cases have come forward, the church has been trying to go through these incremental changes.
Yes.
But I think that's what the problem is.
Yes.
Because that's why I feel like we're not only on our own personal revolutionary journey where, you know, I've left the church. I'm just, with the revolutionary change, our schedule has changed.
Yes.
Our traditions are changed. We're entering now into the Christmas holidays, and we're redefining how we're spending Christmas and the traditions that we're doing. With evolutionary change I've even been trying to make those evolutionary changes within to stay in the church.
Yes.
And then when this playbook was revealed, and I want to just quickly review the 7 strategies that have been used, that those strategies, when I put it together, I'm like, the church cannot go through evolutional change. It has to be revolutionary, that the people in the pews have to take over running the churches. But the first is to make sure that, so part of the strategy in the playbook was to make sure that euphemisms rather than real words to describe sexual assaults in diocese documents. You should never say rape, you should say inappropriate contact or boundary issues. So you're actually, you know, that's a way to minimize what a person's experiencing. Second, they don't conduct genuine investigations with properly trained personnel. So instead, assign fellow clergy members to ask inadequate questions and then make credibility determinations about the colleagues with whom they live and work. So, you know, it's a form of deflection. Third, for an appearance of integrity, so an appearance of, send priests for evaluation at church-run psychiatric treatment centers. Allow these experts to diagnose whether the priest was a pedophile, based largely on the priest's self-reports and regardless of whether the priest had actually engaged in sexual contact with the child. It's just so absurd. Fourth, when a priest does have to be removed, don't say why. Tell his parishioners that he is on sick leave or suffering from nervous exhaustion, or say nothing at all. Fifth, even if a priest is raping children, keep providing him housing and living expenses, although he may be using these resources to facilitate more sexual assaults. Sixth, if a predator's conduct becomes known to the community, don't remove him from the priesthood to ensure that no more children will be victimized. Instead, transfer him to a new location where no one will know he is a child abuser. Finally, and above all, don't tell the police. Child sexual abuse, even short of actual penetration, is and has for all relevant times been a crime. But don't treat it that way. Handle it like a personnel matter in-house. So it's horrifying to read again.
Yes.
Aloud. It yes. reinforces that this has been a long journey. This is not the last conversation that we're going to have about this. I would like to bring another voice to the audience, which is an attorney who's worked with over 2,000 cases of defending those who have been sexually abused in churches all over the nation. So we'll be in 2019, we'll be continuing our conversation to kind of go in depth, because based on the numbers of the podcast, we're over 10,635 listeners a month tuning in. And so I'm hearing that this is important. We've been hovering around 10,000 a month. And so now this series has kind of knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, this is extremely important, you know, and it's kind of a taboo subject too, to some degree, I want to say. For most Catholics, for, you know, some of the believers, probably they wouldn't even be as courageous as to go ahead and talk about this on the open air, or even engage in a real conversation within their families regarding these matters. The problem being that, they are so sucked into the religion that this is something they believed in for their whole life. They have vested in it. They've been, you know, it's part of the core of their being.
Yeah.
It comes as a shock when they hear things like that, and it's not easy to get them to change their minds or see things the other way. But they go through a long period of suffering, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the idea of the revolution in that, you know, you need just to stop sometimes a little bit brutally, ask the real questions, you know, question your beliefs. Question whatever tradition you might have adopted for your life. And only when you can do that, that actually you will get to see the doors starting to open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's when you're ready that the truth can also step ahead into, you know, coming in your way to meet you. And not before that. So this has been good and difficult at the same time, you know, talking about these subjects, but it will have helped a lot of people.
And where are you at in this process right now?
Yeah, there's been a lot of major steps, I want to say. I went from being completely disappointed by the act. It induced in me a lot of vulnerability.
Yeah.
A lot of vulnerability. But from that, I moved to another step where I pretty much started questioning everything, you know. And I think that went pretty quickly. I'm trying to talk about those steps as if, you know, they took long time, you know, between them. But I think I moved quickly through these steps. And I think my refuge is just the trust in the higher power for now, and not give a blind trust to anybody just because they wear a robe and they call themselves a pastor or a priest. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
Well, people need to earn trust. It's not just granted.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, whatever the position is.
Whatever the position is. And but so is it for anybody, you know, lay person, whatever we meet.
Well, we've been through this with medical doctors where
exactly
we had to take charge of our own medical health because it's our bodies.
Yes. And, so our bodies.
And just, it's our spirituality. We need to take charge of it. And I
absolutely
think that that's even in, you know, more, I'm more aware of that now.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Just like I was saying, you need that breakthrough. You need that rebellious attitude at some point to be able to perceive, in fact, that you don't even need to go to church, as a matter of fact. You know that?
Yeah.
The higher power is with us at all times. That's why from time to time I feel like I need to turn back to the old African tradition, which was completely holistic. Because the old African saw God absolutely in everything and at all time. You don't need to move to go to a church to go meet God. God is here right now, this very second.
Yeah, he's with
here.
Us.
Mm-hmm. He's here. And you don't need anybody between you and God. That's the simple
the bottom
truth.
Bottom line, yeah.
You don't need anybody, you know. Don't we say that God is the merciful, God is the most loving entity there can be? Why do you think then all of a sudden that entity can impose somebody between them and you to meet you? It's like you're telling your daughter Olivia, oh Olivia, from today on to ask me money to go for a party or whatever, to ask your the most important things you need for your as a teenager or as a kid in a house, you need to pass by this one guy, you know, in town. Go tell them whatever you need and they can talk to me. It doesn't make sense. Nobody does that. Even human beings who are limited in terms of intelligence and, you know, spiritual capacity can't do that because it's stupid. It doesn't make sense. God would never do that.
Okay, the funniest thing that you said in this series was, are we to entertain stupidity?
Oh, yes.
Here it is again.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It is stupid.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who came up with all sorts of, you know, fabrications, things.
Well, and you're not saying this because you haven't been studying spirituality and religion for a long time. Why don't you tell the audience what you've been up to almost 2 years now?
Well, on my way, God willing, you know, in as little as a couple of months, I'll be graduating from spiritual direction program, you know.
So you'll be a spiritual director.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's just the best thing I could have done for my life, I guess. Because at the end of the day, what we need in our life is to be aware of our spiritual path and to be aware of every little step that we, you know, mark in the direction of meeting our God. And we have to also help other people who have the same need. In fact, everybody has that need to be awake and to be aware of their spiritual path, the only path that is, in fact, the truth that leads them to God. Mm-hmm. Now, everything that we do, going to church, prayers, reading, whatever, should lead to that one and unique contact that we need to have with God. And in fact, that contact, we can establish it without even going to church.
So any other interaction that interferes with your own spiritual
yeah.
journey, direction yes. you're going,
yes.
is what needs to be...
It needs to be put aside. It's not important because...
So if somebody comes in between
exactly.
your direct relationship with God...
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
That's a problem. Mm-hmm. Because they will try to put in your head some stuff that don't help you.
Yeah.
You know, every one of us has a unique path to God.
Yeah.
A unique. And that means whatever is most important to me at this time or which subject I tend to lay my mind on at this moment is not necessarily what you as a different seeker, Nancy,
yeah.
To be concerned about.
Yeah.
Your time will come, or maybe the time for you to do that has passed. You've done it already. You need to get involved in other series of things
yeah.
that make you go higher and higher, become lighter and lighter. And the ultimate reality is to become one with God.
Yeah.
You know,
so when power comes in there from
yes.
exerted upon you,
yes,
or over you,
yes,
and the control comes in,
yes,
and then and entitlement,
like yes.
somebody thinks
yes.
that it's their right
yes.
to have control and power over
you,
and they your spirituality,
you. Yeah, they alienate you. It's just like it's an imprisonment.
Yeah, it's a very bad relationship.
Yes. You just got thrown in jail right there.
Yeah, exactly.
And the worst form of jail is the mental one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? When you're in a mental jail, you're done.
Well, and you're feeling like your soul's corrupt.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that's what's been particularly awful about the situations here.
Yeah, I mean, it's awful. How can you continue to trust, you know, we were little kids and we trusted priests and pastors and gave them, you know, a blank check, you know.
Yeah.
Just, you know, I've seen little kids called priests Jesus or God, you know, little kids.
Yeah.
That's how innocent as they can be.
Yeah, absolutely.
They see in you a Jesus.
Yeah.
And guess what? The next minute, you are having sex with those kids.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in the most visceral way.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just like an animal. Even animal do respect sex because they only have sex when it's due.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
And,
but this isn't even normal sex.
You
know, it isn't. It isn't to, like, I don't know, do animals prey on, have sex with, you know, little baby animals?
No.
I've never seen that.
It's so regulated. It's so regulated, so natural, you know.
Right.
It's so natural.
That's how far off the mark.
Yes.
Yeah.
Far off, out of the way.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. So we've learned a lot through this revolutionary journey. I'm really glad that we, you know, took the risk.
Yes.
You know, to put ourselves out there.
Yeah.
In this way, and to talk about the importance of this because it's affecting all of us in different ways. And
it
I'm not talking
us.
About just people who are Catholic. I'm just talking about everybody is hearing about these cases and wondering within their own faith, you know, how prevalent is this? And, you know, there's just lots of questions around it. But the beauty of really like just sitting with the truth and the impact of this, you can start to develop some real critical awareness about
Absolutely.
What's going on. And I like the concept that Debbie Unterman brought to us of the cognitive dissonance.
Yes.
So since she brought that up, where it's a place in which in your mind you can hold space for two contradictory thoughts.
Yes.
Like, how can I go to church and have these feelings?
Yes.
And I thought that explained my inner turmoil.
Yes.
When I was going to church before
oh, yes.
the playbook.
I
was like, well, I'm going there for the people. I love
yes.
my French Africans.
Yeah.
You know, and I love praying together and singing
yes.
together. And
yes.
sharing meals together and celebrating life transitions together. And I really feel still at a really deep, sorrowful loss as a result of those traditions.
Yes.
And yet I can't go back to them because I have come closer to my understanding of there are just certain things I can't do anymore knowing this truth. And the reason I can get to this place is because there's different barriers that people go through, and then we'll kind of wrap up our conversation here. But I think this has to do with why do some people stop their revolutionary process halfway, midstream?
Yes.
Well, you can get into perfectionism.
Yes.
Where you're kind of focused on, if I can't do this perfectly, I guess I'm going to disengage.
Yes.
Or I'm afraid to really feel deeply. I'm afraid to feel grief.
Yes.
I don't know that I want to feel grief.
Yes.
I don't want to go there.
Yes.
Another barrier to finishing the process where you end up with a new, carving out a new element of your life is sadness.
Yes.
You know, you don't want to feel sad, or you may be afraid. Like, this has eroded my everything I thought.
Exactly.
I'm afraid to live without going
without
to church.
That. Yes.
Because I've been condemned to hell if, or it's a sin if I don't go to church.
Yeah.
You know, all those things that you have to like
it's
sort
not a
through.
Big joke. Yep.
It is. But if you release that and allow yourself,
yeah,
the hell with it.
Yeah, the hell with it. What a joke.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And the other thing is self-judgment.
Yes.
I think in the last one, the sixth one, is the inability to forgive either oneself or someone else.
Yes.
So any of those six things are barriers to people really thoroughly making revolutionary changes.
Yes.
And I see that if individual parishioners do not do this, they won't come to the point where they see that they need to take charge of their faith and take charge of the church, because the priests and the hierarchy, they can't do it.
It's sad. It's sad. I don't know which of the steps would corroborate with what I think might be also another scenario or cause that would infringe the revolutionary, you know, unfolding. And it's the what will other people say or think about me?
Yeah.
You know.
That's that. It's the judgment of others, along with the self.
Yes.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's like when you're evolving in a community, and just look at us going to church every Sunday, you know, being completely involved, doing this and that, music, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden, you don't show up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people start calling you. People call you and asking what's going on. Or if they don't do that, but when you really meet with them, even occasionally, it doesn't matter where you meet with them, they, you know, cripple you with questions as to what's going on. And the big interpretation behind that might be, oh, my brother or my sister is just being another victim of the evil one who wants to get him out of the church. You see?
I see.
And
it's,
if you're not,
the circle.
It's the circle, the vicious circle. And if you're not strong enough, you're going to buy into that, believing that maybe an obscure force is operating from the darkness trying to pull you out of light. So that's where it's critical that at a certain point in life that you remember that there is only God and nothing else. And nobody can predetermine or should be tracing you the road to meeting your God.
Right.
Once that you know that, then you understand that deeply within you, nothing will scare you. Nobody will come and tell you, oh, no, you might just be another victim of the evil one or whatever, or tell you, oh, one of these things that will make you start questioning your awakening.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Because they want to believe something else.
Yes.
They want to stay in that belief.
Yeah.
They don't want to move.
And the reason why I
wanted
to talk about this, it's denial. Yeah.
Yep.
It's because our community, our environment, our the closest environment does exert a strong fascination on us, a strong influence and impact on us.
Yes.
So it takes on us to be solid.
Yeah.
Solid nerves is what you need.
Yeah, to make transitions, yeah, to make transitions out of a community that has been harmful to you.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this has been a very enriching experience, and I continue to invite other people into the conversation by responding to me either personally at nancy@wementor.com, or if you're receiving this podcast on another medium like Facebook or LinkedIn, you can also, or Twitter, you can respond through social media, and I will respond, and Mike will be too able to respond.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're in this together with all the population. Your worries are ours. And we get to be privileged to have a microphone.
Yeah.
And to be listened to. Not pretending that we know all of it, but we know certainly out there are people who are going through a lot with all these questions. So it's good to share. It's good to exchange. That's the only way you get freed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So any of you who are going through this revolutionary process and would like a little help, I am very efficient with how I use people's time, and I've got some openings in my schedule for phone appointments. And instead of $150 per hour, I'm charging $60, so $1 a minute. And I have lots of different exercises that will help move you through the process, so that you can revolutionize your life and take a look at and carve out a new direction for your life as a result of this transformative process that you're in. So you can reach me at 612-804-8920. That's 1-612-804-8920. Give me a call. Let's get to work, and let's grow together. All right. Thanks for tuning in. By the way, everybody, this is our last podcast for 2018.
Oh, my God.
Yes,
Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy Hanukkah. And
Hanukkah.
The winter solstice is coming up, and we've got a lot of volatility going on in the government right now.
Yeah.
So we'll see if it makes it through this shutdown. I don't know. It's called a Trump shutdown, if it does come about. Anyways, whatever happens, we're going to be here in 2019 to welcome you and the new world into, see what happens into this next year.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thanks for listening in. It's been a great year. It's been a volatile year. It's been a hard year. There's been a lot of joyous things, and I really appreciate working with you, Mike. Our work has really deepened, and our understanding of what we're doing on this planet is getting very clear.
Thank you. Always great opportunity for me to learn too. You don't believe how much we get to learn just from trying to speak.
That's why these are important, meaningful conversations.
Yes.
Yes, so, that's right.
Thank you for the beautiful year, Nancy. I have learned a lot working with you. It's part of my integration in this new society. Been here for a while, but I can't say I feel in my skin like a Native American. I still have a lot to learn.
Mm.
And this has been a great opportunity for me also to learn, you know. And so I'm grateful for everything.
Good. It's good to end with gratitude, always. All right. Well, have a great next couple of weeks, and we'll be back. Thanks for tuning in.